You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast. Here we bloody go. Welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and I released a version of this show to the Facebook group last year, so it was a bit more exclusive, but now it's for everyone. This is an absolute, I was going to say corker. God, what is this? Smash hits. I don't know what it is. It's bloody excellent. Here, live at the Gilded Balloon, is an extremely refreshed Tony Law. Thank you very much.
Good. I'm glad you got the mic just like I like it. Nice and low.
Yeah, absolutely. By all means, this was in part of the pre-show prep that I'm afraid I didn't remember to do. If you feel free to leave it in there or you can hold it. That's
hello, everyone. it works fine. So, yes.
Yeah. Tony.
Comedy, bunch of bollocks, isn't it?
Go on, let's follow that. We could talk about literally anything. I want to know, I've got loads of pre-prepared questions, but let's start with your show. For anyone here that hasn't seen you, I've heard you described numerous times as being called surreal. Do you think you're surreal?
No. That's what other people say because they don't know what to call it. It's my show's about love.
Okay.
It is. Love, it's about love and beauty and the enormity of the universe.
Okay.
And that's it.
You just
fuck y'all. That's all it's about. It's about love and beauty.
Is that how you describe it?
It's what is going on in my mind when I'm saying it out loud from my face.
Okay.
But it could also be just a bunch of bollocks.
Okay.
It could be that. It could be that. But I don't think it is. I think it's about beauty and love and marriage and adoration.
Okay. And those are things that the show is about. What are the actual objects in the show? Because you talk about all sorts of different subjects and things. Would you say that it isn't about...
Well, the literal objects in the show are bits of space.
That sounds quite cryptic.
We've got planets floating around. We've got bits of planets. And we've got puppets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's adorable, really. It really is.
It is adorable. Yeah. I saw it the other day.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Keith Moon be interviewed before?
No, I haven't.
Before he died?
No, I never saw that.
Well, this is how he sounded.
Yeah.
Just before he died.
Well, that...
Hello, honey. But, you know, fuck you. Thing is, you do the comedy, don't you?
I do the comedy, yeah.
Yeah, and you do the comedy to make some money, to make a living. But also, you can also do the comedy and not just make the money. You can also do the comedy for to make yourself feel better about terrible life.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I read that. Okay.
And so that's what I try and do, is I try and heal myself through doing a bunch of bollocks.
Okay.
And I do.
Is it working?
Nearly. Nearly there.
Okay, so can we talk about the difference between the Tony Law comedy of say 5 years ago and what you're doing now? Because there's been quite a profound change in your appearance.
No. It's been a long, slow change.
Okay.
It's been quite slow, actually. If you go back like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. I was quite different. I had a quiff. Mm-hmm. And was terribly handsome.
You were clean shaven and very
clean
smart.
Shaven, yeah, incredibly handsome. I was a really good looking man.
True.
Who did stuff that I couldn't commit to because it was just too weird.
Okay.
But I still said it out loud. But it wasn't, you know, I couldn't make it work.
What was the origin? Can we just talk about how you started as a stand-up? And were you always doing stuff that was really weird?
Yes.
So what were your whereabouts, where and when were you, how old were you when you started doing stand-up?
Well, My first time I did stand-up, I was quite old, actually, because I was, like, lazy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I started comedy when I was about, 28.
Okay.
Quite old.
Yeah.
Because I'd never had the courage. I'm from a farm. Any farmers in? None. No fucking... There's one there. You know what it's like. You live in a fucking farm, and you're all alone on the farm, and you just think, I hate this. And you want to escape, and you think, I know what I'll do. I'm funny. But you also think to yourself, do you know what? The only people who can do comedy are city folk.
Yeah.
With their university degrees and their fancy ways. And it turns out that's quite true. It's true. And then, eventually you get to London. You think, well, I'm 5,000 miles away from my farm. I might be able to do it. And then that's when I decided I had enough confidence to do it.
So did you actually start in London? You weren't performing?
Yes, I started in London, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was funny all the time in Canada.
Were you? Were you funny as a kid? Were you
funny as fuck, mate. I seriously was a funny motherfucker. Like, sorry, but I was. Like, all the time, all day long. My mom's from Trinidad and Tobago. How can you not be funny with a mom from Trinidad and Tobago? A white mom from Trinidad. You shit, man. You're funny all day long. Monkey know a tree to climb, boy. Listen, I'm telling you, boy. So, yes, I was funny all the time. But him and me know what it's like to be on a farm. He's stuck out there. And the reason I moved to this country, not Scotland, sorry, guys, but the reason I moved to Britain was because I used to be out here in the field. I was literally in a field driving a tractor, listening to The Who, to make my life not be so horrible and awful. And I just used to listen to The Who, and I thought, well, I'm going to Britain, because that's where The Who live.
Okay. Were you aware?
And I came over, and they do live here. Not in Scotland, but they live in London. And I'm 43 years later, I blah, blah, blah. I do know The Who.
Were you aware?
Fuck you.
Were you aware of other comedians? You said you thought comedians came from city places.
I thought they were all university. But you got to go to university and then you become a comedian.
Okay,
that's what I thought.
Was that what you thought when you were on your tractor?
Yes.
Okay.
I thought there's not for me. I can't do that. I'm a working class farm shit fuck. I can't do comedy. Of course you can't. You know, you can be funny with your mates, but comedy is done by confident, wealthy, middle class people. That's what I thought.
Who were the sort of people that you were identifying as that? What kind of
Steve
comics?
Martin, which I couldn't have got that more wrong. Because he was a very working class scumbag like me.
Sure.
And I just watched him and I just thought, my God, you're an absolute lunatic. What are you doing? You cannot pay your bills doing what you're doing. But yet he did. And I thought, wonderful.
So it was only when you came to London that you said you were far enough away from home to be able to to risk it?
Yes. I had enough courage that I was far enough away from the farm and my judging dad and judging mum.
Were they judgmental of your comedy dream?
Yes.
Did they just had no idea that it was possible?
Exactly. Okay. I wish I could like pontificate on that and give you some more material, but that's basically it.
Do you think that's affected?
Well, what
you?
They say, yes,
with something else.
Yes, yeah. It's all affected me. I mean, Jesus, you're a pig farmer, so you farm pigs, and if you don't farm pigs, you go to university, and if you're not smart enough to get into university, you don't go to university. So there's sort of nothing else. Okay. There's no, like, middle ground. But there is middle ground. If you follow The Who, you end up in London.
So were you scared when you first came to London? were you thinking, was that journey, were you thinking, I'm going to go away and I'm going to follow my dream?
No, no,
were
no.
Were you
no,
just
no.
thinking, I'm going to
well,
go
yes,
away?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I went away and I was going to be in a band. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be in a band. Thing is, right, I forgot... You got to learn an instrument. So I did not learn one. So yeah, that was my idea. I was going to be in The Who. I was going to be the new Roger Daltrey, although about 5 inches taller.
Okay.
And that didn't happen. Excuse me. And
how did that?
Well, I muted into a traveler person.
Okay.
Not a traveler. I mean, although that's fine. No, but I.
For the benefit of the listener.
Am I right?
For the benefit of the listener, at that point, Tony was resting his face on the microphone.
I was always interested in history. Mm-hmm. And I just toured around. I lucked out. Got this job with a tour company that took people around European tours. And the only thing was, you needed a university degree to be one of the tour managers. Mm-hmm. And I sort of said, mine's, because it was the 90s, remember? I said, they'll send it. It'll be there, my degree. Of course, there was no degree, but I got the job anyway, and I did it successfully. The best people who loved me on tours, they kept requesting me, was the Koreans. And they just go, we want Tony. I'm sorry about the racist voice. but they did. They were, we want Tony, he our favorite one. Sorry, that's exactly what they said. And they did. And so I would take these Koreans around, and they go, so there was what was brilliant about that. There was a translator between me and them, and so someone would go, so you're driving through Paris, and you pass up just a pointless fountain, and someone going, fountain, and they go, Tony, the people want to know. Sorry about the racist voice, but this is the only way you can do it. What the fountain is called? And I go, oh, well, that's called Miss Me Fountains. It was when the jackal tried to assassinate Charles de Gaulle. Ping lo ma ho na na, miss me fountain. And she'd say that to the whole crew, okay. And I'm going, fucking winner. And what I basically did was go around Europe lying to Koreans. And it made me a nice, tidy little living, I got to be honest with you. But then you take them, here's the whole thing with all these tours, the coach tours. If you go to the leather place, you got to try and sell the leather. But I was trying, not because I'm like an incredibly honest, decent person. It was just that I couldn't buy the bullshit. So do you know what I mean? You go, the leather is great, just buy the leather. And then all these other tours would leave, and the tour manager's gone, ching, 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 because mm-hmm. they've sold it about how this is the greatest leather ever. And I just say to them, shit. It's shit fucking leather, don't buy it. The only place was when we were in the south of France, though. The perfume was cheap as shit. And I go, dudes, buy some freaking perfume, bro. The stuff is like fucking knock off in it. And they somehow understood that. And I would come out of there with like £1,000.
Okay. Were these tours your first experience of improvising, of effectively performing to an audience?
No.
Okay. What did you do? What was your first performance?
In high school, we used to do a drama class.
Okay.
And drama was just us acting like dicks, really.
Yeah, I've done those classes.
Yeah. You've been a dick?
Yeah, I've acted like one.
You've lost some weight. You look good.
Thanks, man. So let's follow this for a minute then. How did you get from the position of being a tour guide to becoming a stand-up comedian?
Oh, wow. Well, you missed out about 8 years in the middle where I was a drug addict.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, whoops.
No, let's... We don't need to miss those out.
I wasn't. No, I just had a good time in my 20s. I think many of you people have had a good time in your 20s, haven't you? It's a terrible time. You think it's fun, don't you? But it's not. It's boring. You're a boring twat, and I was a boring twat for 10 years.
Yeah.
Now raving and pills and that. Lovely. But I sort of just miss my mum.
Sure. You talk about that. You talk
ladies,
about that.
Ladies, am I right? Did I open myself up enough? So
you talk about that in your show. You talk about that.
Yes,
you know,
I do.
That feeling of like thinking your 20s are supposed to be exciting and then taking drugs.
My twitch has come back. I can hear my wife laughing at my twitch. What kind of a wife laughs at her husband's twitch? What kind of a person does that?
Is this an actual twitch? I thought you just...
Yes, I've got a fucking actual twitch.
Oh, that's okay.
Stop laughing at my twitch.
It's audio recording.
Is this on air?
We're not live at the moment, no. We can edit out your twitch if you'd like, but we can keep it.
They can't see it, can they?
No.
I keep looking at him because he reminds me of me, farmer. You beautiful farming bastard. But yes. I mean, it's, you know, fuck, we all have our own shit to bear, haven't we? You know, you grew up in a city or whatever, but, you know, him and I, we grew up on farms, didn't we? And too much happens on farms.
That's too pregnant a pause to leave, Tony.
Too much happens on farms and nothing gets said. Am I right? Nothing
gets said. You need to observe the farmer's code of silence. You talk in your show, Tony, about this experience of being in your 20s and being on drugs and kind of going, oh, this is fun, but actually it's shit and boring.
Yes.
And it's interesting because that's one of the moments in your show that it feels to me like you are an observational comedian hidden...
Pardon,
beneath,
what did you just say? What'd you just fucking call me? You're this fucking asshole over here. What'd you just fucking call me, you fucking prick?
You're an...
What, I'm going around noticing stuff, you fucking asshole.
You are, though, but you say
what
you
am
have
I?
A go at people who notice stuff in
yes,
your show.
Yes, I know.
But
I know.
You're noticing stuff, but it's kind of hidden beneath the disjointed and non-sequitur nature of the of the work. So it's not surrealism. It's not like a Noel Fielding surrealism of there's a, you know...
I have to say about Noel Fielding, if you spend 1 hour with Noel Fielding in a flat... some of the stuff that comes out of it, like, he notices the shit out of stuff.
Sure, okay.
He's so smart, he's so funny, he's so kind and thoughtful. Like, he would be the greatest observational comedian in the history of the world if he chose to do so.
Okay.
But he does not.
Sure.
Which is
Whereas
amazing.
You seem to have a foot in both camps because you are making observations, you're describing the world as you see it. But it's also, it's kind of in such a kind of chopped and changed, topsy-turvy kind of a way. Do you think?
What the fuck did you just say? Yes.
Yeah.
No, I try and, I'm trying to observe the world that I see. Who isn't? It bores the fucking ball bag off me, though, when you go and watch someone in a stadium... A mile away going, did the washing up. Sure. Fuck off.
I did
the washing up as well. I don't need to hear you talk about it, you fucking prick. Sorry.
Where does that come from? What is it? I mean, I know there's a commercial angle whereby you might feel that, like, the spirit of stand-up is being ripped off because people are watching someone that's miles away.
I'm not that clever. I'm not that clever.
So what is it that annoys you about
it? It just bores me. I like to entertain him. If I can make that farmer over there laugh, then I'm fucking happy. Whatever it takes to make that farmer laugh, I'll do it.
Sure.
But without noticing shit. He's already noticed stuff today, haven't you, sir? You woke up today, you looked in the sink, you noticed something. And then you noticed something in the toilet. You don't need me reminding you of what you've already fucking noticed. What you want is me to go, I'm a magic spider Viking.
But your magic
if
spider,
I'm a magic
Vikings,
spider
then...
Viking entertains him, then I've done my job.
But your magic spider Vikings notice things. Like, you've got a routine in your show at the moment about pooing, right?
And
you've,
yes,
got, a show, you've
yes.
got a show about pooing and going, how do you know? How do you know the first time you poo, how do you know that you're about to poo? That's an observation, isn't it?
Yes, it is, prick. I've been outed. I'm not who I thought I was. I thought it was me and Noel Fielding and Julian Barrett sitting in a field picking daisies. Yes, you're quite right. Yes, so I'm trying to do that more now.
Okay.
And you're right.
In which direction are you trying more?
I'm trying to be more like mainstream because I've got a family and I want to feed the fuckers.
But
do you hear my wife laugh?
The very concept of you feeding.
I do genuinely want to feed my family more food. Because they are so skinny and we have such a small flat. It's really tiny and I really want my family to have better stuff.
Sure.
So I am making a huge effort to become more mainstream. I really am. Every year I try my hardest to just connect with more people.
Sure.
Is that- but I don't give a fuck about people. It's nerds like you. You're the people I love. I'm sorry about that. I can't escape from them. That's farmer dude over here. These are the people I entertain.
Sure.
And it's sad. I want to be out there, you know, but I can't. It's just nerds. Mate, all these people who read books, they go to comedy probably 25 times a year. Mm. Those are the people I'm currently entertaining. And it's my destiny is to keep being with them.
Do you think
but
so?
But really what I want is the people who go to comedy once a year.
Yeah.
To watch a man at the end of a stadium. Those are the guys I want to connect to.
It's interesting that, I mean, there's truth in that, isn't there? Because
it's all truth.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't fucking lie. What am I sitting in here in front of you lying?
A minute ago, you were a spider Viking. I'm just trying to pick out which
spider
of the
spider Vikings are true. He knows it. Look at him. He shook his head and went, yep, I know what you mean.
So
spider Vikings are out there. You know they are. You've seen a spider Viking, haven't you? Do you know what? I can only see your silhouette. The lights are so bright behind you, I cannot see your face. You just got lovely ears.
So thank you. I should say, before I go any further, thank you to Kai Humphries for spotting Tony outside the venue and frog-munching him into the show. It very nearly didn't happen, so thanks to you, Kai, that it did. I'm not going to say much about this one. It's fairly obvious what's going on. But although it was a pretty scary experience to begin with, and I speak as someone who's worked with Tony on several occasions and really like him, but it was kind of wild initially, I think this developed into something really beautiful. I really did. There are a few episodes I find as memorable as this one and from which I think I got so much. I really enjoyed the tussle. It was a bit like the Brendan one, but kind of more wild. I really like it. I hope you do too. Let me know your thoughts. You can email me, info@comedianscomedian.com, or you can tweet me @comcompod. I'm running out of ways to thank you for your donations. You're all very kind, and you know you are. Tony talks here about the debt it's possible to incur with repeated trips to Edinburgh, and I wish every comic had a group of people as loyal and generous as you're being to this show. Thank you. It makes me feel very loved and encouraged. The PayPal button is at comedianscomedian.com. If you'd like to put something in my virtual hat, I'm accepting bitcoins. That's not a joke. I can accept bitcoins. Email me if you like for my wallet details. I bought some bitcoins in the street recently from Pete Dobbing. Fascinating experience. I highly recommend it. Hit the website to donate. Any amount accepted, 5 to 50 or even more if you're feeling mental, or if you prefer, just share the show with a new listener. I'll keep being extremely grateful. Re-listening to this episode has got me all excited, so let's smash straight back into it. This is Tony Law.
Am I the worst guest you've ever had?
No, this is fine. We're good. This is great. Don't worry. So
who's
many
on
of,
next?
So many of my
who's
guests
next week?
Go, tomorrow is Andrew Maxwell.
He'll be funny as fuck. I read books. I read fucking books. I'm Andrew Maxwell and I read books. The Middle East, I'll sort that fucking shit out. Done tomorrow's show.
Do you want me to keep naming guests? And you can
yeah,
go
no.
And
well, okay, who's the other guest?
Then we've got Milton Jones.
I don't know who he is.
Okay. So...
in character? Out of character. I'm actually quite Christian. Fuck you, Jesus.
So listen, let's...
No, listen. Any Christians in? Hands up. Right, don't come in 2 days.
I want to talk about the change in your...
The change? That's a great question, isn't it? I want to talk about the change. We all want to talk about the change. The changelings. Anyway, sorry, the change.
I want to talk about the change in your persona that you described from the way you've been doing stand-up since you started to now, because you're very different visually. You've made a change. You talk about Milton Jones. Milton Jones, you know, has big hair.
He goes, I've got mad hair.
He's almost changing the other direction now. His jumpers and hair are becoming more and more sane as he sort of...
I never did mine on purpose. It was all just a thing. I'll tell you what happened, Stuart. I'll tell you exactly what fucking happened. My wife and I were so depressed. We were £35,000 in debt, terribly in debt. And I went, I can't do it. I can't do comedy anymore. It's bullshit. I can't do it. I can't afford to go to Edinburgh. And I was so depressed, I just started growing my hair. Mm. And I had a quiff. And you take a 1950s quiff, let it grow out, and then you grow a beard. And I was knocking around the house going, you got to sort it out. This is fucking bullshit. And I just went, I quit. I fucking quit. I can't do comedy anymore. And I phoned Tommy. Excuse me, Tommy from The Stand. Just on the offhand, I went, I can't afford to do Edinburgh Festival. Because as you know, doing all these venues, posters, PR, bullshit, you'll all end up in 20 grand debt. But I phoned Tommy and he went, Dare, here's my Irish accent there, Tony. He's not Scottish. Tommy's from fucking Ireland. And Tommy said, and I won't continue on with it, but Tommy is from fucking Ireland and he lives in Scotland, for fuck's sakes. Anyway, Tommy Shepherd is an Irish man who lives in fucking Scotland and owns the Stand Comedy Club.
Sure.
Yes. And so he said to me, as luck would have it, I got two slots for you, Tone. I got 7:50 at night or noon. And I went like a dickhead, I'm going to go noon. So I did. I went noon. Just... no PR, no posters, no nothing. We went noon. First day of the show. But Tommy says this thing. He goes, like, whatever. What if you lose money that week, I'll take it. I go, what? If you lose any money, I'll take it. If you win any money, we'll split it. I'm like, what the fuck? And so the first day, one punter, one. Two journalists, two friends. Tough gig. A horrible gig, but it built. And word of mouth from that one person went around, and it built, and it built. And by the end of the run, we're selling out a 60-seater. And the next year, I thought, well, I'm going to be loyal to Tommy. Of course, next year, sold out a 60-seater. And then we went to the 150, sold it out, sold it out, sold it out. And that's where we are today, because he said, basically, you can lose all the money you want.
Yeah.
And I'll take it on board.
So the debt that you were in, the 35 grand of debt,
we've got it right down
from Edinburgh.
Yes, you from ended doing up in it with Avalon.
Okay.
And at the Pleasance, and it's not the Pleasance's fault; it's Avalon's fault. But yes. And so we've got it down now. I think it's about 10 or 12. Eight.
That was, I don't know if that'll come up on the recording. That was
so we've got it down to eight. It's taken us years, you know. But also, what's wonderful is we're able to take our children up here and give them a nice, and they love it, I hope. Well, they don't love it. I mean, they hate being taken away from their routine. But we try and make it as good as we can, and you know. And then I go to all the children shows, and I steal all their ideas. I literally do. Last year's show, I got nominated for the fucking Fosters. All the ideas in that show were stolen from children's shows. I swear to God, I stole them. I don't give a shit. Elephants hang. Oh, what a beautiful show. Oh, my God. That was so, oh my God, it was so emotional, Tony's show. Yeah, because I've been watching kids' shows for fucking 4 years. Sorry. I hope there's no judges in tonight.
So at that time, like the pre-change moment, the time when you were growing your beard and growing your hair and wandering around the house thinking about giving up, depression. So were you... Did you pull any bookings? Did you think, right, that's it, I'm stopping comedy?
Yes, I did, yeah. Pulled a bunch of bookings. I wasn't going to do it anymore. And Storm just went, well, I'm sorry, dude. I've got some fucking bills to pay. So I had to do some gigs. Yeah. So I had to do gigs. And but what was horrible is I had been doing, like, you know, the comedy clubs, like the Comedy Store and Jonglers and all that. And I had to play these gigs where I was dying on my fucking hole. Mm. You know, just like, fuck off, mate. You know, all that shit.
You said
but I had to do it for money.
You said in a previous show, one of your,
Whoa, well, that was a weird one.
It was. I was in the middle of a question and I wanted to get the cough out quickly so I could keep talking. You said in one of your previous shows, it was a comment related to Jack Whitehall about how, you know, you've got different hurdles to get over because, and what you said
well,
was,
you know,
in Jonglers where they hate you, not because you've said anything offensive, they like that, but in places where you've offended their sensibilities.
Yeah.
So that must have been incredibly hard for you, not only trying to sort of put a square peg in a round hole, trying to stay true to what you wanted to do in an environment not created for that, whilst knowing that you have to do that in order to pay the bills. I mean, that must have been incredibly difficult.
Well, you know, what he said.
So my question then is, how do you, given how...
I don't know. I don't know. Alcoholism.
Okay.
I don't know how you carry on doing that, you know. Yes, that's a very, what you said there.
Well, I wanted to ask specifically about the performance of it, because I know from a lot of the interviews I've conducted with a lot of comedians struggle with anxiety and depression and alcoholism and a variety of challenges. A lot of them are also very happy, and a lot of those who used to suffer are now happy again. Let's just kind of keep that light at the end of the tunnel.
Losers.
But
yes.
What I wanted to ask is, it's specifically with reference to your stuff, which when you get the right people in the right room, when you get your nerds that love you and get it, then it can fly. But these people here. But when you're in tougher rooms and you're improvising and it's getting nothing, the question is not just how do you keep going in life, but how do you keep going on stage? How do you not pull back and go, oh, fuck it, I'll just do some cock jokes?
Money.
But surely
rent. Fucking rent.
But I think that a
rent.
I know. I agree. What I'm asking.
That's
is
why you
different.
Do it is fucking rent.
But what I'm not asking, why do you do the gigs? I'm asking, why do you not settle down and do a load of standard generic bullshit that would work?
Ah. Oh.
Because
right.
a lot of people do make that decision, don't they?
Yeah,
they've got their dreams and they've got their ideals.
Yeah.
And then...
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Because I can't.
Okay.
Because I can't. Because I'm lazy and I'm like that fucking farmer over there. Him and me are the same way. He's not going to do bullshit he doesn't want to say. He'll do what he wants to do, won't you? You'll just do what you do, and I do. You have to. It's the only way you can do it. It is. I can't. You know, I've tried. I've tried to notice stuff. You know, I've tried to do observations. I've tried all of that, and I can't do it, you know. It's a good point. Good point, but I can't. You know, I... Muslims. Shut up, Tony. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just tired of hearing people's opinions about Muslims.
You had some
women.
Material.
Fucking hell.
You had some material about the cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad.
Oh yeah, which was years ago. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which was your take on that? It was a different and original.
I forget that bit. How did it go?
The material was you were saying I've done some drawings of one of the prophets. Which one was it? Not Jesus. Was it Buddha? No, it wasn't. It was one of the other prophets. I did some cartoons.
Oh, yes,
as the audience are gradually catching,
it's quite
you're like,
good, wasn't it?
I did some cartoons, and I didn't show them to anyone. But wow, they were offensive. And
yes,
I guess you used to come
that's
out.
That's quite
look
good,
at
actually.
Yeah.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. I might bring that back. That's a good routine.
But if I
saw someone do that tonight, I go, that's brilliant. Tony, you did that. Oh, fantastic. I mean, you forget, don't you? Quickly, you write a new hour every year.
Sure, but my question is that is arguably some stand-up comedy about Islam or about censorship or what have you.
Yep, yep. So I'm full of shit. It's basically
no. I'm
yes, I am a liar. Are you guys enjoying this? What kind of show is this? You're watching a man have a nervous breakdown, and you're okay with that? The fuck is wrong with you? I seriously am having a nervous breakdown, but it's been taking 4 years. 4 years, and I'm putting them all into Edinburgh shows.
Okay.
And they're winning awards. So the longer my mind frays and I keep breaking down, hopefully I can give my family a fucking somewhere to live. We do have a place to live. It's a flat.
How out of control are you? How is it? Are you genuinely all the time? Now you've obviously finished a show. Your
two shows.
Okay. Oh, you did your show and you did the Richard Herring's show. Yeah. And you seem right now, this minute, like your life is spiraling out of control. You're desperately trying to make money to feed your family.
I'm totally in control. I am. This is all a facade. It is.
I'm not.
You wouldn't believe how much work goes into make a show look like my show in the daytime look so out of control. You wouldn't believe how much effort goes into that.
Tell us about the effort. Tell us about the work.
I'll tell you what happens is we start in about... I start working on songs in January with my friends who are musicians. And I go... Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-da, and we work on the songs. And then I get my puppet maker to start making my puppets. I go, they need to look like this. And then I go and I get my image people and we source images. And my wife and I work on the show from January. And... every day,
what is that work? How do you mean you work? Well, do you write together? Do you write in a team with your wife?
Well, me and Storm will meet up in the morning, in the cafe, and she'll go, right, what are you opening with? And I went, what do you mean? It's always space. We open with space now. And she goes, why space? What does space mean? And I go, what do you mean? What does it mean to you? Well, it's about how terrified I am of the massive universe. She goes, yeah, but why? Well, because I love my children and I don't want to die. And she went, okay, but how does that feel to them? And then we just, I swear to God.
This is fascinating. Go on.
A real bunch of bollocks I do on stage, but this is the conversation we have in the morning. I am terrified of abandoning my children and you. And then we do other bits. What's the next one? Zephyr. Why are you Zephyr, Lord of the Wind? Well, it's because of my hair. I am Zephyr, Lord of the Wind. Okay, that's great. Why does the audience enjoy that? Well, they enjoy it because it's about the way your appearance. And then the next bit is I've got one of them faces and I do a bit about science. Why do you do that? It's because Robin Ince and Brian Cox do comedy and it's about that. And then I do another thing about Stalin. Why do you do Stalin? Stalin represents Stuart Lee. I think you guys laughed quite heartily at that, but he does. And anyway, that's it. And we go through the whole hour. And that's why we've abandoned our children to nursery every day, is to work on the show every day. And then,
at the end of it, you end up with, that's how you get an award-winning show, is that it's been rigorously questioned, the whole process. You're not saying anything you're not just kind of writing a crazy monologue and then doing it.
Yeah, it looks like an asshole just fucking saying shit out of his face, but it's not. Every single thing has been thought through. Every single thing. I think about every word out of my mouth. I mean, you know, you riff a bit, but most of it is all thought through. So yeah.
And is
I feel like I've ruined the magic.
No, you haven't. If anything, you've deepened the magic.
I hope none of you ever come see my show now. It's much better, I think, when you just go, wow, this is just happening.
Sure.
But it's not.
Yeah, but then equally, you know, when you watch a guitarist play an amazing solo, you know, does it ruin the magic to know that he's spent all day practicing and working on his finger work? Well, maybe not. I think it actually makes
Pete Townsend
richer.
Can't just do the windmill accidentally. He's practiced that shit. You know, Roger Daltrey doesn't spin the mic first time. He's not just done it that day. He's been practicing it no one's looking. Hasn't he?
Absolutely.
He's my friend, by the way.
Has this... is he your friend?
Pardon? What did I say out loud?
I did
the gig for the Teenage Cancer Trust.
Oh, yeah.
In Royal Albert Hall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and... yeah, so...
So how did you and Storm arrive at this method of working like that? Is that something you've always done? Or is that, what were you doing? How were you writing before? When I first
saw you... Is anybody still interested in this? Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't be unsettled.
Sorry, it's just I have such low self-esteem that I can't imagine anyone wants to hear this. But yes, I'll tell you.
They totally do, yeah.
Storm said to me not long ago, well, 4 years ago, when the children were born, I'm tired of this shit, of you just going on and doing bollocks. I'm going to help you. And she wasn't able to work because we had twins. Mm. And she thought, this is my extra job. I'm going to make this shit work. And instead of being a photographer anymore, she just went, let's sort this shit out. And so we just, that's how it started. Just, you know, sort yourself out, you fucking dick.
And presumably...
Jeez, I swear a lot.
Presumably, anyway. Some of the elements that make up your half of the conversation when you're working with her now, were they come from your experience of being on the road, of being the comic that you were before? Like, I've got two very distinct images of you in my mind. I've got the clean-shaven, fringe-having that Mr. Tony, and I've got this Mr. Tony. And that guy, how was he writing, and how was that different to what you were doing with Storm? How are you making that stuff written?
You're a clever fucker, aren't you? You really are. You sort of nailed it, actually. Who is this fucking guy? Yeah, he's exactly it. It was just a commitment from my wife and me to be committed to each other, like properly, you know. Mm. Not just being husband does job, wife does job, meet in middle. We went, let's just be a proper married couple. And then everything changed. Everything, you know. Everything. Fucking dogs don't get walked as much. But the kids get hugged. Get the fuck out of here. No, it was basically about you commit to me and I commit to you. Let's commit. Let's be proper. Sure. And then we commit. And it comes out in the comedy, you know. I'll go, hey, I got a bunch of new material. Like, listen to this. And she go, she would never say that. She'd never say it's shit. She'll go, yeah, it's all right. What does it mean? You know, like that.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Positive. So then you change it, don't you?
And does Storm come to your gigs with you?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, okay. All the time. Yes, and poor old granny, eh?
Yeah.
Well, she deserves it. Well, granny's very posh and sort of abandoned her children, so I think it's payback time. Wow, I've said way too much time. It's like in my family. You know, sure. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, okay.
Well, anyway.
Okay. So listen, we've got about 5 minutes left to go, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to ask Tony questions. While you're thinking of them, I just wanted to ask another little...
You're great at this.
Thanks, man.
You're so good at this.
Thank you.
I'm really surprised. I thought this was going to be terrible, but do you know what? Talking about yourself is awesome. Am I right? Who doesn't like talking about themselves? Even farmers. I bet he wouldn't talk about himself very long. Well, I don't know. I do some vermin. Anyways, yes.
So what I wanted to ask about was you, outside of the context of the shows you do, where you're in control, you're doing the material that the two of you have prepared and worked on.
Wait.
When you do something like Nevermind the Buzzcocks, and you have to play, your kind of character, your persona, has to play with other people on a panel.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does that stuff come from?
No. But Storm frees me up. It frees it up.
Okay.
I'm only able to do that because I'm free on stage finally.
Sure.
I'm not pretending to be anything.
Sure.
So me and Noel go, mouse cat. You know, he chases himself. Mouse cat, he chases himself. We do that because it's just like pure riffing, like
yeah, okay.
Yeah, but so, I'm but free.
So that work. What we mean is that work has got you into a position where you can now just play. It's
yes.
Kind of do you, what,
freeing.
Yeah. Do you have any?
It's a bit like when Jeremy Clarkson, who I thought I would hate.
Yeah.
He didn't know what to make of me. I had all nail polish and crazy hair, and I was you're a horrible right wing Tory prick. And he just looked at me, and then I did an airplane noise. And he loved me, and I thought, well, clowning is the answer.
That was the next question I was going to ask, was what Have you ever done any kind of training in clowning or anything? What do you understand by clowning? What does that mean?
No, clowning just means making my parents pay attention to me.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually a really good answer.
That's why anyone ends up being funny, isn't it?
Sure.
It's because they just want their mum and dad to look to the left or to the right.
Lovely. Can we...
Sorry about that. It was a bit dour, wasn't it?
No. I liked Dour. It very much.
Dour.
Does anyone have any questions for Tony in the couple of minutes before we wrap up? Yeah, over there. Hello. Did you ever have a recovery, like a safety bit, so in jonglers or commercial clubs gigs you could recover?
No. I fucking should have, bro. I really should have, man. And I, you know, I thought I did, but it wasn't. It's like my monkey farming bit. That's not going to save it, man. Yeah, so I did, like, in my head have saving bits, but not, like, what they wanted.
Sure.
Those racist, rapey, fucking horrible pricks. Sorry, did I say that all out loud? But they're just so, yeah, it's all like someone ends up with sex and a woman's a victim. I did not have any of those.
I think one of your, having seen you in a few commercial clubs years ago, I think one of your things where you would do the bit about running up to someone and shouting, Margaret. Like your things were like, here's a thing you can do.
Yeah.
Like that was your kind of emergency
about that
material.
Bit. Yeah, that's good.
Was kind of
Margaret! Margaret! How did it go?
Oh, God. You have to. It was framed as, here's a thing you could do, which is great because you can just say it out of nowhere if a gig's tanking.
Yeah.
Here's a thing you could do, run up to someone. What was it? You would run up to someone tomorrow, anyone, could be a kid, and shout, Margaret, Margaret, Margaret. I can't remember the punchline.
I know, there was a punchline in there.
Look
but
it up on YouTube.
That we remember the run up.
Or buy it from Go Faster Stripe, ladies and gentlemen.
No, it's probably not
point.
On there, actually.
We've probably got time for one more question. There's one over here. You must have had weird gigs. This is.
Oh, it depends what. It depends how you define weird. You know, weird as in weird good, or weird bad. You know, like your gig like yesterday was fucking weird. In what's it called?
It's called This Is Your Trial. Is
this
it?
Is your trial.
This is Dave Allison in the audience from This Is Your Trial, which is
Dave Allison. He's got a lady's name for his surname. I swear to God, a
concept show available for stag parties and probably TV at some point where you.
It was
you
the weird gig. I got Bob Slayer on one side,
yeah,
Barry Fern on another.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a weird gig. Weird gigs depends what you call weird. I mean, I think most festival gigs are weird. Not Edinburgh Festival, but like rock festival gigs are always weird, totally unpredictable.
Yeah,
there's always an intent. You're way too high up. And they're all way too high. And should not have a comedy tent because there's music next door. I'd say all music festivals are the weirdest gigs.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't be more entertaining on that.
Yeah, how do you cope? How do you cope with odd situations? Do you turn up your
weirdness? What is it with you people? Who are you guys? Yes, you hit it head on. Like in Melbourne. The reason my act always used to be just surreal and sort of quite quiet and go like this. I do history and blah, 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 blah. But I started doing shouting and bringing in another element to my gigs like that, you know, and then bring it down and bring it up and bring it down like the Who. Big, small, big. You are, you know, bow, 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 like just like that. Was because in Melbourne, I was introduced on after the most famous act in all of Australia. You wouldn't even know them. That's the Something Brothers. Who gives a shit?
Don't know which one you mean.
But they're massive.
Oh, the Umbilical Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So 500 people are going, ooh, a fucking Umbilical Brothers coming on, mate, fucking brilliant. I'm going, why am I on after them? Why is this happening? Oh, yeah, they got to take down the stage rig. Well, I don't know what that means. But I had to go on after them. And I was backstage, and Sean Locke, of all people, just came out and he went, what the fuck are you doing? What are you putting him on after them? What's the matter with you? That's not putting Phil Collins on after fucking Led Zeppelin. What's the matter with you fucking arseholes? And he was really cross. He was genuinely cross. But they wouldn't change. And I was going, why? I was just a scumbag. And they was sorry, mate. They went on, whoa, the funniest thing Australia's ever seen in their lives. And I thought, I can't go on and just do monkey talk. But I found a white boiler suit backstage and a baseball cap. And I put that on and I just came out and started shouting, hey, anybody see my wood chipper? And I just, and that's Margaret.
Yeah.
Yeah. Margaret. That bit with I can't remember. So I just shouted my way through it and acted like a lunatic and actually did all right. It was really funny. Sean Locke at the end of it, though, going up, the umbilical brother come and go, ah, sorry about that, mate. And I went, well, you were fucking shit at him anyway, you fucking cunt. He is adorable, that man. And an asshole.
I want to talk. We've got to wrap up now. That's really all we've got time
for. Thank fuck for that. I'm thirsty.
I just.
Who's thirsty? Yeah, farmers are.
The farmer, yeah.
Meet you at the bar, bro.
I just wanted to finish. And this is. I don't really know what the question is here, but there's a thing you did when you were really kind of. There's an expression in clowning, which is to be in the shit. Like it's a Golia expression or someone like Dr. Brown would use it, where you get yourself in difficulty and you don't know what's going to happen next. And they know that you don't know what's going to happen next and you have to find something. And there was a moment in one of your previous shows where it was the elephant ending of the show and you'd get really big and expressive and ludicrous. It'd be going on for ages. And then it would draw to a sort of natural close. And then you'd say, you'd think that's a perfect place to end the show. But I think there's more in it. And I don't know what the question is, but is that something you go towards? Is that like
yes.
to make that, to instigate something?
I always go towards that place. And I do that in my current show even more.
Yeah.
It'll make you, it'll actually faint. You come to my new show, you will faint. You'll go, oh God, I feel sick. Why is he doing it too much? But it's because of Storm, my wife. She just says, hold. 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 And I go, but Storm, there's no laughs. They haven't heard me talking. They don't want to hear you talking anymore. What are you talking about? They've heard your fucking voice for 45 minutes. 10 minutes of you holding won't hurt them. And I go, no, please, I need to say something. I need to break the silence. Don't you open your mouth. And she's right. It's magical when she says, shut your mouth. She goes, shut your mouth. And you have to actually literally shut your mouth. And it makes it magical, isn't it? You know, your ideas don't have to be blah, 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 blah. They can also be just seen, you know. So anyways, yes. Oh, you're going to actually feel sick in your gut this year if you see this show with all the thing going on and thing. Because it makes you feel, she does. Hold. Hold attack.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's all we've got time for. Please thank Mr. Tony Law.
So that was Tony. What can I say? I mean, it was all there, wasn't it? What an exciting interview. And some really raw, honest stuff came out there. I should probably start serving drinks to people before I interview them genuinely. It's probably an idea for a podcast there. In fact, what there probably is there is an idea for a podcast that about 400 American comedians are already doing. So thank you to Tony. I really, really appreciate that interview. I didn't know what was going to happen, but what did happen was certainly very exciting. And I should have said before as well, the edited highlights of that video are available. There's a little 10-minute video on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/comcompod, then you can. There's a little shareable video there that if you've enjoyed that show and you're happy to share it with people, I'd really appreciate that. I think you're probably going to want to see it anyway, even if you've just listened to it yourself, because it's great fun and, you know, it's even more exciting when you've got the visual bit as well. So share that around the place. Have a look at that if you like. You know I like to recommend stuff in the closing moments of the show via audible.co.uk/cc. There's nothing on there, I don't think, that Tony's released as yet. This is obviously the audiobook, so you can definitely buy his DVDs, and I recommend you do that. I think you can do that via Go Faster Stripe. So have a suss of those, because it's fascinating watching the development of, I mean, we touched on it briefly there, the development of the smarter, slicker Tony into this kind of chaotic version of his performing self. So have a look at those. But if you'd like to go to audible.co.uk/cc, then what I'm recommending this time, I'm sort of quite in the habit, if I don't want to recommend someone's actual stuff, forgive me, if I'm not actually able to recommend someone's my guest's stuff on Audible, why not recommend something I've enjoyed that chews up some road miles for you? And this, it's a curveball. I bloody love World War Z. And I'm going to call it Z because that's its title. It's American. Because it's just unbelievable. There's nothing to do with it's the basis for the Brad Pitt movie, which I enjoyed anyway. But if you've never seen World War Z, if you've never read it, or even if you have read it, man, it's got a huge cast of actors telling this kind of reportage, futuristic, post-apocalyptic description of what the world is like now after the zombies attacked. I'm a big fan of zombies. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm slightly ashamed to admit it. Henry Rollins is one of the voices playing T-Shawn someone. Can't remember who, but I listened to it a couple of years ago and it's always just stuck in my mind as something that I would actively look forward to drives so I could hear the next bit. So if you're a comic or a long-distance driver or you work somewhere where you've got the opportunity to listen to stuff, get yourself to audible.co.uk/cc, get hold of World War Z. I think it's something like 14 hours. Don't quote me, but it's massive. Really, really good fun. Thanks to everyone. Thanks to Tony. Thanks to Pete Jones and James Lowy for video and sound, respectively. Thanks to BLC for tweeting. Thanks to Nathan Wood, who co-produced this episode. Toby Rose and Graham Crockford for their technical support. Pete Dobbing for Bitcoins. And thanks to James and Ant at SoTV, who produced the Edinburgh run. Thank you very much. We'll speak to you soon. I don't know if I'm going to take a break, but I'm not going to guarantee you the next episode is out next week because we've powered through a bunch of these and I might need to get my breath back. Do email me, info@comedianscomedian.com. Tweet me @ComComPod. Let me know what you think of the videos, whether you're managing to share them. You know, I don't want to put this on you. It's on me, isn't it, to promote it. But if you like it, I'd appreciate it. If you chuck them around the place, let me know. Maybe it's not worth doing. Maybe it is. Get in touch. Who knows on who's next time? I've still got a bunch of great ones. My God, what have I? I haven't released Tim Vine yet, have I? Or Ed Byrne? Max and Ivan were lovely. David O'Doherty. Jesus, the last one we did. Yeah, there's a lot more good stuff to come. So don't panic. Obviously, new ones with Jerry Christmas and another super secret guest coming up soon. I'm sort of rambling now. That's all. I'll speak to you soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.